Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson. Looking back, this used to be a pretty straightforward country. What you saw was what you got, or at least it felt that way. That's not the case anymore. A lot of what you read at this point feels not like news, but instead like some highly curated version of reality crafted to manipulate you. Even if you're not paranoid, you feel like the crazy guy in the bus mumbling about how nothing is real, nothing is real. So at the very least, it's obvious there's a lot of court intrigue going on in American politics, and only a small percentage of it ever becomes public. One day you wake up and Kamala Harris is the vice president. How'd that happen, you wonder? No one will say, but you can be sure there's a story there. So here's the latest example of unexplained weirdness in the news. Mike Pence, of all people, has just swooped in to save Joe Biden. Yes, Mike Pence, a man so flamboyantly pure he won't have dinner with ladies, not his wife. And yet Mike Pence also had secret documents in his house, just like Joe Biden. Bet you didn't see that coming. It wasn't so long ago that Pence was on television saying he was sure he had no classified documents in his possession. He said that a few times. Then just days ago, Mike Pence sent his personal attorney to search his family's home in Carmel, Indiana for classified documents. Now, if Mike Pence didn't think he had classified documents, why would he send his lawyer to go look for classified documents? We can't say for certain, but it's entirely possible, in fact, it's likely, that Mike Pence was asked to do this by federal prosecutors who are trying to build a case against his old boss, Donald Trump. Now, the point would be to show that not every federal official walks off with state secrets. Donald Trump was uniquely evil in that regard, as in so many others. See, Mike Pence didn't do it. So if that was the plan, and we suspect that it was, it backfired spectacularly because Mike Pence's lawyer promptly discovered classified documents. He immediately loaded these documents into his car and drove them back to Washington to hand them over to authorities. Mike Pence, meanwhile, not only notified the National Archives about these new documents, he also called the FBI, and then he called leaders of both parties in Congress. Which is odd, because what Mike Pence did was a felony. We've heard that again and again. Keeping classified documents at home unsecured is a felony. But Pence didn't seem embarrassed about it at all. In fact, he almost bragged about it. So clearly, Mike Pence is not worried about being punished for keeping secret documents in his home. And that's strange in a country where all laws are supposed to apply equally to all people. But Mike Pence is not worried about FBI raids. And that's interesting. Maybe someday we'll learn why. In the meantime, though, the effect on the media was immediate. If someone as unimpeachably holy as Mike Pence had classified documents in his home, that means that every person who's ever served at a high level of government also has classified documents at home. And that means, by definition, that keeping classified documents in your house is not a big deal except when Donald Trump does it. Mike Pence proves that. If Mike Pence committed the same crime as Joe Biden must be innocent. That was the media's conclusion. Watch.
It is possible for documents to be classified that we would all look at now and think, well, that's basically public information. Like, that's right. Not, it's not a big deal. And so that's one of the things that, if it, it's a strong element in, what you would call the Biden defense here.
It's not a big deal. Well, actually, we got to say it. That's mostly true. It usually isn't a big deal. As we pointed out for years now, the federal government has managed to classify more than a billion public documents. Now, the vast majority of these documents, citizens, us, have every right to see. Joe Biden, for example, is still hiding secrets from the Kennedy assassination 60 years ago, not to protect national security, but because the CIA doesn't want to answer questions about its involvement in the murder of an American president. And that's an outrage in a democracy. You should be mad about it. But reporters in Washington are not mad about it. In fact, they're the ones telling you that Julian Assange and Ed Snowden are criminals, not whistleblowers. So the press corps, just like the federal bureaucracy, loves secrecy because secrecy is the key to their power. On the other hand, you can never dismiss any case out of hand because the details are what matters. So in the case of Joe Biden, what exactly was in those classified documents that he took home? The entire story, the question of whether it's a big deal or no big deal at all, hangs on that question. What was in the documents? Why can't you tell us? Well, as of tonight, no one has told us, so we don't know. But thankfully, Miranda Devine of the New York Post may have brought us a little closer to the answer. So she analyzed the documents that we do have, the ones found on Hunter Biden's famous laptop. And on that laptop, she found a remarkable email, an email the Justice Department has never shown to the public, despite the fact its agents have had it for years. And the document that Miranda Devine found indicates that Hunter Biden had classified information in his possession. Almost certainly that came from his father, then the vice president. And that he used that information to make piles of money for the Biden family while working at a fake job in Ukraine. That's what it shows. So if there's an actual scandal at the core of this classified document story, here it is. So here are the details. On April 13th, 2014, Hunter Biden sent an email to his business partner at Burisma, Devin Archer. Now, he sent this a week before his father, the vice president, flew to Ukraine to meet with Ukraine's prime minister. In the email, Hunter Biden composed a detailed memo with nearly two dozen data points about the political and strategic situation on the ground in Ukraine. What's so immediately striking, and Miranda Devine pointed this out, having read the entire laptop, is that this email bears no resemblance to anything else we have that Hunter Biden has ever written. In fact, it sounded like something produced by the State Department. There's no question that Hunter Biden used classified materials to assemble this email. Listen carefully. Quote, "The strategic value is to create a land bridge for RU to Crimea," he writes at one point. Notice he uses the diplomatic abbreviation for Russia, RU, because he's in the know. Quote, "That won't directly affect Burisma Holdings, but it will limit future UK exploration and utilization of offshore opportunities in particular. It will also," Hunter Biden added, quote, "further destabilize the UK nationally and for whatever government is in power, and the US will respond with even stronger sanctions. Those sanctions will threaten the tenuous support of the EU, which does not have the political will to incur steep energy price increases," and so on. Now, keep in mind, if you're wondering, is this plausible? Keep in mind that when he wrote this email, Hunter Biden was an active drug addict. Just 2 months before he wrote this, 2 months, in February of 2014, he'd been thrown out of the Navy for cocaine use. He couldn't even stay sober long enough to pass a scheduled drug test. He was completely out of control. Yet somehow, in that state, in this email, Hunter Biden managed to sound like a seasoned Ukraine hand from Foggy Bottom, referring to Russia as RU and all the rest. And critically, he seemed to know for a fact the details of American diplomatic strategy in the region. The U.S. will respond with even stronger sanctions. How did Hunter Biden know that? Oh, come on. Come on. Keep in mind that when Mike Flynn mentioned the topic, just mentioned the topic of sanctions to the ambassador from Russia, the FBI swooped in and destroyed his life and threatened to send him to prison. And he was the national security advisor at the time. He had the highest possible clearances you could have. Hunter Biden had no clearances whatsoever. He was the drug addict son of the vice president. And here he is in this email casually mentioning to his business partner that sanctions may be coming, and here are the effects on the EU and energy prices, in order to keep making 80 grand a month in a no-show job on the board of a Ukrainian energy company working on a topic he knew nothing about. So what are we looking at here? What we're looking at is a crime. That's a crime, a real one. Hunter Biden clearly knew it was a crime. He told his business partner in the same email to go to CVS and buy a, quote, burner phone to make sure their conversations were not seen by anyone else. Now, what's amazing and so telling is that the DOJ has had this for years because the FBI seized Hunter Biden's laptop before the last presidential election in 2020. Keep in mind also the context, and the context is always Ukraine. That was true in 2014. It's true in 2023. Back in 2015, Ukraine's top prosecutor, Viktor Slokin, began investigating Burisma and wondering, why is it paying the vice president's son tens of thousands of dollars a month? So how did Joe Biden respond? Well, within a year, Joe Biden, the vice president of the United States, had Slokin fired by threatening to withhold U.S. aid money to Ukraine. We're not making this up. Here's the tape.
I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. Said, "Nah," I said, "I'm not going to. We're not going to give you the $1 billion." They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, "I said, call him." I said, "I'm telling you, you're not getting the $1 billion." I said, "You're not getting the billion. I'm going to be leaving here." And I think it was what, 6 hours. I looked. I said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." Well, son of a bitch, got fired.
Arrogance is his weakness. Can you imagine bragging about that? Joe Biden, in front of the Council on Foreign Relations, on camera, just admitted he had the prosecutor fired because the prosecutor was doing what our Department of Justice would not do. He wanted the vice president's son investigated for trading classified information to this business for cash. And Joe Biden just admitted that he acted on behalf of the U.S. government, but actually on behalf of his family. That's a crime. Hunter Biden had access to classified documents. That's a crime. And here he is bragging about it. Hubris is always their undoing. So this really is the scandal right there. It's about Ukraine, and it's about the Biden family's stream of income, which was illegitimate. So we put in a very simple request today to the White House and to Hunter Biden. Simple question. Did Hunter Biden ever receive in any form U.S. government classified information about Ukraine? Period. Simple question. Did this happen or did it not happen? Of course, they didn't respond because the answer, very obviously, we know thanks to the reporting of Miranda Devine, is yes. She joins us now. Miranda, thanks so much for the story that you wrote and for joining us tonight. So you've read the entire laptop. You wrote a book about it. You clearly remember this document. Tell us how different this is, this email, from everything else you saw on the laptop.
Hi, Tucker. Look, this email is like nothing else that Hunter has written in the entire 9 years covered by the laptop. It is extremely long, 1,300 words. It's very detailed, very well informed, well written. You know, it reads like an official document, even it reads like a classified document. There's information in there that's not readily available. He sounds very knowledgeable and very breezy about it. And you have to remember that this is at a time a month before he joined the Burisma board. He needed money desperately and because to feed his drug habit, and they were going to pay him $83,000 a month to do not very much. And obviously they were paying for his proximity to his father, and he was showing, as he never did again, his value to them. And of course, having access to classified information would make his price much higher. So that's sort of the motive for it. The other thing about it is that it's very easy, I think, for the special counsel, Robert Hur, to immediately just clear up whether or not Hunter had access to classified information by just cross-matching that email and other information on the laptop with the information in those classified documents that have been discovered at five different locations in Joe Biden's home and his office at the University of Pennsylvania. It should be pretty clear. We know a bare minimum about those classified documents, but what we do know is that they pertained to, at least the first tranche, to Ukraine, to the United Kingdom, and to Iran. Now, this particular email talks about Ukraine and the United Kingdom. So it's kind of a guess at this point, but it's a pretty obvious connection. And I think this is a perfect synergy for the special counsel looking into Joe Biden to connect with the U.S. attorney in Delaware who's investigating Hunter Biden.
Well, yeah, I mean, they tried to send Mike Flynn, the national security advisor, to prison for talking about sanctions. If you're a foreign country, U.S. sanctions are an extremely powerful tool. They can undo your economy. So you want to know what the trigger is for sanctions, correct? So that information, this will trigger sanctions, is it keep speaking of important classified information? Is there anything more important than that other than war plans?
Well, and this was a week before Joe Biden went to Ukraine, armed with millions of dollars in energy aid for the Ukrainian energy industry. And Hunter was angling to get on the board of a Ukrainian energy company. So, you know, what goes around comes around.
Ah, it's also degrading to the country. Miranda Devine, thank you for your reporting these last several years. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tucker.
So since the moment he took office, Joe Biden has encouraged, no exaggeration, the poorest people in the world to move to the United States with no regard for its effect on the country or our labor markets. So, of course, that's happening. And a lot of these people are coming by boat, and a lot of them are landing in Florida. Coast Guard has just intercepted one boat that is huge. So big, the video is hard to believe. Fox's Trace Gallagher has that story for us tonight. Hey, Trace.
Hey, Tucker, this was the biggest smuggling incident in the region. 396 Haitian migrants found sailing on a 50-foot boat, meaning there wasn't room for all the migrants to sit down. The boat was spotted near Quesal Bank, an island between Cuba and Florida, and the Florida Keys was likely their destination. In the last 3 months, migrant encounters in and around Miami are up 400%. Haitians are leaving their country because of deepening political instability, which is saying something considering Haiti is among the most politically unstable places on the planet. There is not a single democratically elected institution in Haiti. And Haitian nationals are now fleeing in numbers not seen in more than two decades. Last fiscal year, the Coast Guard interdicted more than 7,000 Haitian migrants. That does not include the tens of thousands who have come across the southern border. The migrants found today are being taken to the Bahamas, processed, and then returned to Haiti, though many on board said they would simply get on another boat and try to come back to the U.S. Now, DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas says all Haitian migrants caught at sea would be repatriated, but it's almost like the wet foot, dry foot policy of the 1990s is now back, where Cuban migrants who got one foot on dry U.S. land were allowed to stay. Well, now it appears that any Haitian migrant who comes by sea gets turned back, but if they walk to the southern border, their odds of staying in the U.S. are exceptionally good. Tucker.
That's an understatement. Exceptionally good. The great Trace Gallagher for us tonight. Thanks so much. You can see Trace every night at midnight on this channel.
So the Pentagon has just decided we need to send tanks to Ukraine, M1 Abrams tanks. Kind of a complicated piece of equipment. Who's going to run these tanks and who's going to fix them? Well, no one in Ukraine. Americans will do that. This war has escalated. They haven't told you, but it's true. City of Chicago, meanwhile, is depopulating thanks to crime, but the mayor has a new plan. Digital currency. Oh, it's also perfect. Straight ahead. Someday, historians will untangle one of the biggest mysteries of the moment we're living through, which is why would our leaders want to make our society more dangerous? Why would they want more rape and armed robbery and murder? They clearly do want that. Why? We don't know. We can only chronicle the effects. Lori Lightfoot has made Chicago intolerable for people. It's so dangerous. That's intentional. She banned police from chasing criminals on foot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as a result, of course, the poorest people are suffering the most. Street vendors robbed all the time. So Lori Lightfoot is trying to get reelected mayor of Chicago. Unbelievable that that could happen, but she might be reelected. And during a debate the other day, she was asked, well, how are you going to stop crime? And she had no answer at all. Instead, she told street vendors to carry as little cash as possible.
We have been in Little Village working with those street vendors, understanding what the nature of the crime is, making sure that we're doing things in concert with them to help them make sure that their money is secure, not use money, if at all possible, using other forms of transactions to take care of themselves.
So what you need, street vendors, dirty water dog guy,
is some central bank digital currency.
So Evita Duffy is a reporter with The Federalist. She's actually gone to Chicago to cover this story. She's spoken to several tamale vendors in the city about Lori Lightfoot's plan, and she joins us tonight. Evita, thank you so much for coming on tonight. So how do the tamale vendors in Chicago feel about using central bank digital currency for their tamales?
They didn't like it very much. And Tucker, I spoke to a lot of tamales vendors. This is what one of them had to say.
So it was four guys. They came from the truck. white truck, a little white truck. And so they came and they just came with the guns pointing at me. So I got scared. So they come and they go like this. So they took my little change that I had and hit me.
Yeah. So he doesn't seem to think, or he didn't say in that interview with you, very sad story, that getting rid of cash would solve his problems. I mean, they punched him in the face anyway.
Yeah, Tucker, just for a little bit of context about this community, it's a majority Hispanic. These people work very hard. They're all evening making tamales, and they're up early in the morning at 3 a.m. in the frigid cold, selling to blue-collar workers. And they're very vulnerable. A lot of them, they're out on the street. They're working on a cash-only basis. It's very dark in the early hours of the morning. And so many of them have been beat up, like the man in the video. Some have had guns pointed at them and robbed. All of the vendors that I talked to were absolutely traumatized. And Lori Lightfoot's solution is to say go cashless. But all of the vendors that I talked to said that is just not a possibility. We work on a cash-only basis. Our customers are on a cash-only basis. This is very normal for impoverished communities, especially ones that have a lot of illegal migrants in it. And Lori Lightfoot would know this if she cared about them remotely, but the vendors that I talked to said she doesn't care. And of course, it's all very ironic as well, because Lori Lightfoot and Kim Fox are all day preaching to us about equity and making policies around equity. And yet the people that are being hurt the most by the way that this city is run are poor minorities. And if I could add one more thing, they also told me that it's gotten so bad that they've had to rely on local community organizations, but also local gangs for protection, which is the kind of thing that you see in third world countries, the kind of countries that these people fled from. They came for the American dream, and what they found is a Lori Lightfoot Chicago nightmare.
Yeah. Well, if you cared about them, you let them carry firearms, and that would solve the problem immediately. But instead, all their solutions empower them. Get rid of cash so we can track you. Okay. Yeah, no thanks. Avita Duffy, great to see you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, of course, the war in Ukraine has totally destroyed Ukraine, killed over 100,000 Ukrainians, but it's still going. Why is that? Because the Biden administration has kept it going. They could have forced a peace. They haven't. They don't want to. Why is that? Why kill all these Ukrainians? Why destroy an entire country? Well, because people are getting rich. BlackRock plans to get rich. So BlackRock is now saying out loud that the war in Ukraine, the death of all these Ukrainians, is actually a great opportunity to transform Ukraine into a beacon of capitalism. Right. Goldman Sachs is excited, too. Their CEO says that rebuilding Ukraine represents, quote, good economic incentives for real return and real investment. Imagine. Whose money is that? Oh, it's going to be yours to rebuild Ukraine. These guys are going to get rich from it. You see how this works? So yesterday, because these people have no self-awareness whatsoever, the president of Ukraine, Zelensky, went on camera to say he's thrilled about all these economic opportunities. Watch this.
It is obvious that American business can become the locomotive that will once again push forward global economic growth. We have already managed to attract attention and have cooperation with such giants of the international financial and investment world as BlackRock, JP Morgan, and Goldman Sachs. Such American brands as Starlink or Westinghouse have already become part of our Ukrainian way. Your brilliant defense systems, such as HIMARS or Bradleys, are already uniting our history of freedom with your enterprises. We are waiting for Patriots. We are looking closely at Abrams. Thousands of such examples are possible, and everyone can become a big business by working with Ukraine.
Oh, you can make a lot of money in Ukraine. It's the Ukrainian way, which is, of course, corruption, one of the most corrupt countries in the world. But if you're looking for a money laundering opportunity, well, it's the perfect place for you. Send us more tanks, by the way, and as by design, it was confirmed today that this country is, in fact, sending more M1 Abrams tanks to Ukraine. Was it obvious enough what's going on here? Could it be more obvious? Well, Bradley Devlin is a reporter with the American Conservative, who wrote a great piece pointing out the obvious, and we're delighted to have him join us tonight. Bradley Devlin, thank you so much for coming on. So, no, you know, all the conversation about Ukraine is cloaked in language borrowed from 80 years ago. He's Churchill. This is Dunkirk. Every hairy cliche in the world. What nobody says is this is a huge business opportunity for the worst people in the world.
Yeah, Tucker. Zelensky just said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah.
Right? He's a comedian and actor, and he doesn't give up the bit very often. But every once in a while, it slips through the cracks. And what he said was, listen, we're all going to make money hand over fist here. They're unashamed of working with corporations like BlackRock that make money from crowding out American families in the U.S. housing market. And BlackRock is just as unashamed. They're happy to take the money they make making houses unaffordable for Americans and giving it to a country 5,000 miles away.
But all these Ukrainians are dying, and Americans will die. I mean, those tanks need Americans to operate and maintain them. So Americans are going to die in this war in even greater numbers than they have. And so if you're BlackRock or Goldman or J.P. Morgan, and you're bragging about how much money you're making off people's deaths, aren't you ashamed a little bit or no?
No, of course not, because they don't think of themselves as Americans. They're ashamed to be American. They think of themselves as citizens of the world, right? And so these obligations to community, to tradition, to nation, well, that's just obstacles in the way of their pursuit of power and wealth.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. And honestly, it's Republicans like Lindsey Graham and Michael McCaul in the House who are making this possible. Both of them are always welcome on this show to explain why they're doing this exactly. Bradley Devin, in the meantime, it's great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Tucker.
So we don't dip into spiritual matters too often because this is not a theology show, but it is kind of obvious that there's a spiritual component to what's going on in the country right now. Kind of hard to ignore. Even non-religious people are noticing a little bit. Our friend Vincent Everett Ellison is out with a new documentary on this topic and gets right to the point faster than anyone we have seen. That's straight ahead. So our friend Vince Everett Ellison just made a new documentary called Will You Go to Hell for Me, in which he takes a big picture assessment of the two political parties through a spiritual lens and comes to a bunch of different conclusions. And we thought it'd be interesting to hear some of them. So here's our conversation with Vince Everett Ellison. If you've been to Sheila Jackson Lee's district in Houston lately, or Selma, Alabama, for example, you will come to a pretty obvious conclusion. Democrats care deeply about the people, but not at all about actual people. Selma, Alabama, they never stop talking about it. But have they done anything to make Selma a decent place or help the people who live there? No, it never occurs to them. Our friend Vince Everett Ellison has just produced a new documentary on this fact. Here's a preview from it.
You're voting for a party that tells you they are going to abort children up to the ninth month, castrate little boys and call them little girls, mutilate little girls and cut off their breasts and give them puberty blockers. And you don't think you're going to be held responsible?
As we look at the Democratic Party and the chaos that they bring on our community, our young men, our young women, I have to ask you to look at what they've done to us. Look at what they've done to us. Look at what they've done to us.
Anybody in the Democratic Party that tells you any different, he's a liar, he's an apostate, he's an affront to God, and he should be rejected by any Christian walking on this earth. And he's inviting you to go to hell with him. Don't go with him. Don't go.
The documentary, as you saw, is called Will You Go to Hell for Me? It's out on February 25th at willyougotohellforme.com. Vince Everett Ellison produced that documentary. We're honored to have him join us tonight. Vincent, thank you so much for coming on. So you grew up in the Delta in a world completely controlled by the Democratic Party. You've made a study of that party, your life's work. What do you conclude in this documentary?
Well, Tucker, thanks for having me. And
of course,
your viewers can go to willyougotohellforme.com and view the whole trailer and also purchase this video if they're so inclined. Look, this started from a trip my daughter and I had, and we stopped by McDonald's, and this lady going to a pro-abortion march asked my daughter to join her because she saw she was Black and she thought she was liberal Democrat. And my daughter very, very nicely said to her, ma'am, I'm a Christian and I vote my values. And that was just so interesting to me because I said, why don't more people say that? I'm a Christian and I vote my values. You know, my last book, 25 Lies, the first lie I wrote about, I said, the Democrat Party tells us that it's only politics. God won't hold you responsible. They've told America and they told Christians and people of the book that there's some type of severability between your vote and your walk with God. And that's Romans right. 14 and 12 tells us we will stand in front of God and be held accountable for everything that we do in our lives. So now you have Christian people and people of the book voting for a party that last week voted against a law that would mandate that doctors give aid to children that survive abortions. Yeah, they voted to allow children to die. This is a party that allows for and wants to support 9-month abortion for children. This is a party that believes in this transgender sexual grooming thing to a point where they'll allow, where they want you to castrate little boys and cut off the breasts of little girls, and they're telling people they're not going to be held responsible for this. That is a lie. The Democrat Party is an evil institution. They are controlled by a cabal of perverts, liars, and psychopaths. And if you want to know what evil is, I'll make it easy for you. Anybody that intentionally harms a child, even Jesus Christ, the greatest human being to ever walk this earth, said, if you harm one of these little ones, it is better that a millstone be tied around your neck and you be thrown into the sea. Well, I hope some of these Democrats can swim.
Vince Everett Ellison, one of our all-time favorites. Great to see you tonight. Thank you, and congrats on the documentary.
No, thank you, Tucker. Thank you for everything that you do. And I treasure our friendship, man. You're a good man.
Amen. Thank you. So the after effects of the profoundly disappointing midterm election are still being sorted out. The last one is a few days from now, and that's the election for the next chair of the Republican National Committee. It has an incumbent, and there is a challenger called Harmeet Dillon. She announced her candidacy on this show last month. She joins us now with an update on that race. Hey, Harmeet.
Thanks for having me, Tucker.
So where is when is the race, and where does it stand, do you think?
Well, our election is going to be on Friday this week, January 27th. And where we are right now from the time that I announced on your show is that we've had a tremendous outpouring of support from all over the country, from grassroots voters, from members of Congress, and from some of the party's most significant donors. And I would say probably over 1 million emails have been sent to the RNC members about this race. And so that's really unprecedented. Where we are inside the RNC, which is a vote between the total of 168 members, is we've kind of perfected our messages and gone back and forth. And when you sort out the trash talk that's normal in a campaign, I think it's fair to summarize the incumbent's message as everything is fine. Let's stay the course. We're doing great at the RNC. And that's what her supporters are believing as well. And my message is, everything is not fine, Tucker. Everything is not fine, American voters. And we have a responsibility as a party to fix what is wrong so that we can win elections. This is politics. It's all about winning and losing elections. And since we've lost in 3 successive election cycles, we must change or we're going to lose in the next election cycles. And so my main focus has been, and it's been persuasive to a lot of members, is we have to focus almost exclusively on making sure that we get our Republican voters' ballots into the ballot boxes by all legal means as early as possible in the process and not leave things to chance. We need to stop wasting donor money and really focus on spending it well. And we really need to be very clear and concise in our messaging, like your prior speaker. The contrast between Democrats and Republicans could not be clearer today. It should not be difficult for us to draw that contrast, Tucker, and yet we have whiffed and we've failed. So I will change all of that if I become the chair of the Republican National Committee, and I feel good about my chances going into the election.
Well, exactly. It's not personal. Of course, it's not personal. It's a question of winning or not. I think it's a persuasive case that you make. Harmeet Dillon, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Good to see you.
Thanks, Tucker.
So the White House chief of staff is leaving because Joe Biden is done, sabotaged by his own party. What's interesting is who's replacing him, the former COVID czar, because he did such a good job. But what's interesting about the COVID czar is how unbelievably rich he is, despite no obvious qualifications for anything. One of the richest people in government. Where'll that money come from? No one ever asked that question, but we're going to after the break. Well, the same people who banned promising therapeutics for COVID now suddenly care about your health so much they don't want you to be allowed to have dessert. No dessert for you!
Britain's top food expert, Professor Susan Jebb, has just issued an edict. She's announced that taking cake into the office could be deadly. It's as harmful as secondhand smoke. Some of us thought it was a nice thing to do. So to get the actual medical answer, we're going to consult, as always, Dr. Mark Siegel. He joins us tonight to assess. Doctor, what do you think?
Tucker, I think the Food Standards Agency in the UK is otherwise known as the Food Police. And I think that the idea that, you can't bring food into the workplace and share it, which makes people feel good, which brings out kindness, which brings out a great hormone that lowers blood pressure, I think that that's really the wrong way to go about the obesity epidemic. And I think that, thank God, that Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, agrees with me, because he said through his press secretary, I like a piece of cake. I like my red velvet cake. I like my carrot cake. I believe in free choice. You know, free choice is the way to go about this, isn't it? Not totalitarian overreach. And I want to tell you a story about that tonight. I have a patient named Joey. Joey makes a great cheesecake. Today he brought me a cheesecake. Today, it was better than ever. Creamy. It had a very firm graham cracker crust. And I said, Joey, what's different? He said, I'm in business now, Tucker. I'm in business now. I hired a baker to bake my recipe. And I said, this is better than ever. And you know what Joey's doing? He's living the American dream, isn't he, with this cheesecake. If our government was involved, shutting him down for spreading chemical, by the way, it's completely natural. None of the phthalates in there, none of the endocrine disruptors that you talk about, natural cheesecake. And he's making a living off of it, not being shut down. So, Tucker, tonight I'm sending one of those cheesecakes to you, and I know you're going to enjoy it.
So last week it was a Viagra update. This week it was about the firmness and creaminess of the cheesecake. I like the direction these segments are going, Dr. Siegel, and I appreciate you're doing it. Thank you.
Free choice. Good to see you.
Amen. So they're abandoning ship over the White House because Biden has been undone by his own party. And the clearest sign is that Ron Klain, White House Chief of Staff, the guy who runs everything, has said he's out of there. What's interesting, of course, he's running away. He'll have some other high-paying job. He'll be denouncing Biden within the year. What's interesting is who's replacing him. And, of course, the rule in this administration is you have to pick someone with a track record of abysmal failure. So needless to say, they're picking the COVID czar, Jeff Zients. In case you've forgotten, here are some of his greatest hits.
Made important strides in equity, with the majority of booster shots going to people of color.
This virus knows no borders. And it's in our national interest to vaccinate the world.
Bottom line, vaccination requirements work. For the unvaccinated, you're looking at a winter of severe illness and death. For yourselves, your families, and the hospitals you may soon overwhelm.
So the guy, it's humiliating. It turned out to be completely wrong. Jeff Zients had no background whatsoever in medicine. He had no idea what he was talking about. And he never apologized for it. So he's getting an upgrade. He's now White House Chief of Staff. But what's interesting is that Jeff Zients also got super, super rich. Now, how did a guy like that get so rich? Well, in just 1 year, 2020, Zients made between $10 and $28 million in 1 year, the COVID year. What? What happened? Sean Davis is CEO of The Federalist. He joins us tonight with possibly some answers. Sean, thanks so much for coming on. So always the story is, how are these people getting so rich? No one ever asked that question. Jeff Zients has gotten richer than almost anybody. How do you think that happened?
Well, it's interesting. I think especially through the COVID thing, it was a story we saw all over the country where, I know it's cliche, but the rich got richer and the poor got poorer. And Zients seems to have used much of his career. Recall, he used to be the Obamacare czar. He oversaw Obamacare's implementation, which was also a government means of enriching pharmaceutical and healthcare companies at the expense of the rest of us. So really, I think his COVID stint was just the remix of his original Obamacare album.
So federal employees have financial disclosure forms that the rest of us can see. Always the story is, who's making money on these policies that don't help the public? So COVID, Ukraine, that's the one story the Washington Post never writes. Why is that?
Well, I think we know the answer is because Bezos somehow got even richer. One of the richest people on earth got richer during the COVID era. But my favorite excerpt from the Zients financial disclosure, I don't know if you saw this. You can go look at it at the White House website. He had up to $5 million in gold bars listed on there. So he's a real man of the people.
Well, he's got a lot of confidence in the U.S. dollar, I see. The government that he runs issuing this paper that's not worth anything, he's buying gold. Ignore what they say. Watch what they do. Sean Davis, thank you for that detail. It's great to see you tonight. We'll be right back.
Thank you, sir.
Even people who were kind of laissez-faire about drugs 10 years ago have to, if they're being honest, acknowledge that drugs are really destroying huge parts of the country, killing hundreds of thousands of people. Whatever we're doing is not working. You wouldn't want to encourage drug use, would you? Oh, Joe Biden does. He plans to open more open drug injection sites for junkies to make it easier to use drugs. So some people are pushing back against this. A new coalition called North America Recovers has formed to fight this plan. Just unveiled an ad telling Joe Biden, quote, please help my son escape addiction the way you helped Hunter. I'm going to highlight that tomorrow in other efforts to bring sanity back to America. We'll be back in 24 hours with the best nights with the one you love. See you then.
And welcome to Hannity. And tonight we begin with an obvious fact. Joe Biden, your president, is the worst president in modern American history. And at the ripe age of 80, he is also the oldest sitting president in American history. Now, needless to say, he is not exactly aging gracefully. We all know Joe is a cognitive wreck, and it's now obvious to everyone, even the Democrats have to acknowledge it. The mob and the media slowly are acknowledging it. In fact, many top Democrats are now measuring the drapes at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the White House, waiting in the wings as Biden circles the drain. But no one is more obvious about his presidential ambitions than the one and only California Governor Gavin Newsom. Now, for years, Newsom has been auditioning to be president. He even took out ads, you might recall, in Florida, touting his great leadership in what he laughably called the true freedom state of California. All right, the reality is very different. California is by far the least free state in the entire country. Without a doubt, it is one of the most expensive, one of the most difficult places on earth to start a business, build a house, fill up your gas tank, mow your lawn, power your home, feed your family, and protect yourself. It is the only state in America that banned the future sale of gas-powered cars, the only state in the country that banned gas-powered lawn equipment, the only state in America that banned plastic packaging, the state with the worst COVID restrictions and lockdowns, including vaccine mandates, mask mandates, lengthy school closures, the state with the toughest gun control regulations, and I can keep going. Newsom just called the Second Amendment a suicide pact, while apparently surrounded by armed guards, of course. We'll have more on that coming up. Now, naturally, California is also the highest tax state in the country. And yet this year, Newsom somehow faces a $24 billion budget deficit. This is just 1 year after Biden's blue state bailout gifted California with a whopping $100 billion budget surplus. Newsom spent it all, every penny, and then some, in less than a year, by the way. And now he's looking for cash. In fact, if passed, a proposed wealth tax will fine Californians for simply moving out of the state. He wants them to pay a state income tax when they don't live in the state, something that happens with a great frequency of late. Now, under Newsom, California is hemorrhaging people. Now, for the first time in its history, the state's population is shrinking. In fact, California has the highest demand for outbound U-Haul trucks. Texas, Florida, the Carolinas, Tennessee, they're all seeing an explosion in growth. California has now become unlivable for millions of Americans, but not because of its geography or climate. People are fleeing the state because of high taxes, burdensome regulation, the high cost of living, the scourge of homelessness and violence and drug addiction, draconian COVID policies, all of these problems, all of them caused and perpetuated by Democrats that have ruled the state now for decades. But now Gavin Newsom thinks that he deserves a promotion. He wants to bring all of those special California freedoms to the rest of the country. Now, Gavin Newsom is a con man. He's a liar. He doesn't know how to manage a budget. He doesn't know how to fix his state's housing crisis. He doesn't know how to lure business and development into the state. And obviously, he has no idea what the word freedom really means. Here with much more, Fox Business host Charles Payne is with us. Let me understand this. So they got, in California, a 13.5% state income tax on top of the top federal income tax rate of 40%. So that's 53 and a half cents out of every dollar just in income tax, never mind property taxes, gas taxes, other taxes that we all pay. So now, if you manage to save money and, by definition, quote, become wealthy, now they want another bite at the apple, and then when you die, they get another bite at the apple. How many times are they going to take a bite of the apple?
Well, they're working on one more really feverishly now, Sean, because you mentioned the massive exodus of people there, the exit tax. Now, this came up a couple of years ago. They've been trying to work it in where if you leave the state, they can still tax you. And so it's like that song, Hotel California. You can check out anytime you like, but your wallet can never leave, right? And it's really nuts. So what they did the first couple of times, a couple of years ago, a few proposals, they started low, right? 30 million, then down to single-digit millions. This one is an extra wealth tax. So they'll start with the billionaires first, and they'll take a big chunk out of all of their assets. They'll add them all up. And then in a couple of years, it goes down to 50 million. You and I have seen this movie before. At some point, it would go from 50 million to 20 million to 10 million to 1 million to $400,000. You cannot leave the state. So you can't afford your electric vehicle. So you can't afford a mortgage. So you can't afford all the taxes you just laid out. Too bad. You shouldn't have been here. Now, here's the rub. What do they say justifies this? Well, California wants to recoup some of the money that it's invested in businesses and individuals. You know that old canard? We used to hear it a lot from President Obama. We hear it a lot from Elizabeth Warren, that if you walk on the sidewalk, somehow the state is partly responsible for your success. Forget about the taxes we pay every day. Forget about the blood, sweat, and tears. Forget about the savings and the sacrifice. The fact that you live in California means that you owe California, and how dare you attempt to leave?
Let me ask you, you know, in the early years of my adult life, the many years, and there were a lot of them, where I was living paycheck to paycheck, I never looked at anybody else and thought they should be paying for anything that I own or have in life in any way. Have we grown a portion of this society that feels that entitled, that they want to empower and embolden their government to take from this group of people and redistribute it to that group of people? In other words, have enough Americans now bought into this redistribution, capitalism, socialism model? Is that now a prevalent point of view? Have I missed the boat on this?
I don't think we're there yet. But I got to tell you, President Biden gave it his best shot last year. Earned income tax credits for couples making $300,000. You know, they took the groundswell and they took it up a few notches. Government handing you money, paying you more money not to work than you would have made working. And of course, with society, with children, with kids in school, they're trying to drive home this message. There's something, I would say, innate. There's something about the ethos of this nation, raising yourself up by the bootstraps, that's still in our core. They haven't been able to unwind it, but I tell you what, they have done a really good job. They've chipped away at it, this entitlement notion and this fairness notion. It goes hand in hand, and that somehow if someone's got a lot more money than you do, something nefarious is afoot, and the government will make it right. They'll take a big chunk from them, keep most for themselves, and give you a few crumbs. Like you, when I was growing up, if I saw someone, I remember the first time I saw someone with initials on their shirt, on the sleeve of their shirt. I say, I can't wait to make money. I'll do that. All my shirts have that, right? It's just something I wanted to do. It's just one of these drivers. When my daughter was born, my first child, don't you know how hard I worked? That's all the motivation I needed, not envy. I do want to share one thing, though, because the clock is ticking. If you live in California, real quick, Sean, you need to do these things right now. You need to get out of the state, turn over your driver's license, register your cars in a different state, terminate all your club memberships while you're there, relocate your family to a new state, get all your heirlooms, everything, even photographs, take them out of the state right now, notify your friends that you're moving, get your holiday birthday card, send them from your new address outside of California, change your professional affiliations, and finally, limit any physical contact to California. If you are making money, you think you're going to make more money. If you're busting your butt to try to make the American dream, move now if you can.
You know, a couple of things. In the years when I needed jobs, and I never got hired by a poor person in my life, I got hired by people that could afford to pay me. Two characteristics. Every wealthy person I've ever met in my life, they have two qualities that are consistent. One is they're smart, and two, they're hardworking. I would imagine the smart part of them is going to start exiting California if they try to implement this. Quickly, agree or disagree?
I agree, but real quick, they're also very frugal. They're also very frugal. Right now in this country, the most frugal group of Americans are the wealthiest Americans out there. They're trading down when they go shopping. They're not buying stuff they can't afford. They're smart. They save. Right. They believe in the long term.
All right, Charles Payne. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you being with us. All right, time now. We call it the Hannity Hot Seat. Tonight's topic, California and the Second Amendment. Now, beware of the old saying, as goes California, so goes the rest of the country. Now, if that happens to this country and we become California, the rest of America, that flyover country, red state America, you can say bye-bye American pie. It's over. It's done. As you all know, the state is home to some of the most aggressive gun control laws in the country. And yet, according to Gavin Newsom, well, the Second Amendment is a suicide pact. Americans just can't be trusted with that kind of freedom. Now, of course, Newsom said this, take a look, while surrounded by armed guards who protect him 24/7.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.